I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, in for Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Today, we're going to explore a medical mystery and how chronic fatigue syndrome, a condition with similar symptoms but long dismissed by the medical establishment, might hold clues to understanding it. That medical mystery is long COVID. Long COVID is generally defined as having symptoms that persist for more than 4 weeks. Hannah Tripp has lived with symptoms since March 2020, just as the pandemic began.
So I started feeling sick, but I didn't have a very significant case of COVID. And, you know, at that time, they were saving the tests for people that were just like on death's door. So like there wasn't any real way to kind of verify it. You know, I just kind of showed up to the ER. The third time I went, they found out that I had COVID and I was admitted to the hospital. I was there for about 3 days. You know, I had to take a week off after being in the hospital. And then when I got back, like I'd work a couple days, but then the symptoms would get too much. And then I'd have to take a couple days off. And I'm doing all these exams and tests and they're kind of coming back negative, and you know there's something wrong with you, and like you start having like employers kind of doubt you because you don't have this diagnosis. When you have family members kind of wondering, like, you know, did you just burn yourself out, or like are you just stressed? It's really difficult to be the only one that really knows that something's wrong. You keep on connecting to the doctor and be like, I'm still symptomatic, but it's been a couple months. And they're telling you, well, COVID only lasts like a month at tops. This is like a month in, which you're kind of like, well, how do you know it only lasts a month if we've only been in this for like a month or two? Like, and then, you know, 2 months later, they would say like, well, COVID only lasts like 6 weeks top and you're 2 months in, so it can't be COVID. You know, at that point, I had a pulmonologist that reached kind of the end of the rope, but they didn't really know what else to do. I had a cardiologist that reached the end of the rope. They didn't really know what to do. So I think at that point, and I think this is just part of the medical career field overall, there just isn't a lot of time to spend with patients. During that period, there was even less time. And I feel like doctors will recognize that we don't really know anything about the human body. Like our knowledge about anatomy is just so small, but also at the same time fail to accept that because they spend 8 years fully understanding the human body, but I think that gives you a tunnel vision where you need to be able to define everything. And if you can't define it, it's not a problem with the system. It's a problem with the person. It's still with me. It's better than when it was previously, but it's very much dictates my life. You know, right now I still have difficulties driving because I'm kind of a space shot. You know, I don't want to run into somebody. There's days where it's very difficult for me to get out of bed. Brain fog is something that kind of comes and goes. So there'll be days where I can, you know, barely remember just basic facts about like this person's name or even just like what I did this morning. It's so weird to just feel good about being diagnosed with bad news. Like this is something that is going to be with me for the rest of my life. That there is no cure to get back to where you were, but just to have that validation, now you can actually start working towards trying to mitigate some of the symptoms. So I think out of that entire experience, the day I actually got diagnosed was just this almost kind of liberation.
That was Hannah Tripp, long COVID sufferer and Air Force veteran. She spoke with us from her home in Salem, Massachusetts. Doctors and researchers are struggling to figure out why some people who catch COVID end up with long COVID. One thing that's beginning to become clear is that it seems to have a lot in common with chronic fatigue syndrome, or as researchers prefer to call it, MECFS. There's just a handful of doctors who have specialized in MECFS, and today, they have a message for long COVID researchers. Learn from us. Joining me first from New York is Dr. David Petrino, Director of Rehabilitation Innovation for Mount Sinai Health System. He and his team have been treating thousands of long COVID patients. Dr. Petrino, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
So this is affecting a lot of people. The CDC estimates that 7.5% of the country, the whole population, may have long COVID. So it's really affecting Americans' lives and really causing a lot of difficulty, as Hannah's story demonstrates. Doctor, just tell us about what it's like for these sufferers of long COVID.
Absolutely. This is a huge problem. It is certainly not going away. And as you mentioned, it's affecting just so many Americans on a daily basis. The people who come to our clinic are typically reaching a point with their symptoms where they're no longer able to mask what they're experiencing. I think many Americans right now are still feeling unwell months out from their acute COVID infection, but they're still able to function, and they're trying to put it to the back of their mind and get on with their daily life. And unfortunately, what we're learning is that is the wrong approach. This is a progressive illness that slowly worsens over time, especially if you try to push through the symptoms you're experiencing. And so we typically see patients as they reach that point of realization that this is not going away. And the patients who come to see us, from a general point of view, you know, the average age is early 40s. The average medical history is typically unremarkable. So previously fit and healthy, no noticeable comorbidities like chronic lung disease or chronic heart disease. These are people that used to run marathons and be able to take on a very busy day, are suddenly coming to us. And at the point that they reach us, most of them have had to make accommodations in their work, either switching over to part-time or, in fact, becoming unemployed as a result of their symptoms. They're experiencing cognitive impairment that we would expect to see in individuals with a traumatic brain injury or a stroke, not a previously fit and healthy 40-something-year-old who has, you know, just experienced an acute COVID infection. And then the degree of severe fatigue and post-exertional symptoms, which is different from fatigue, which is a whole subset of symptoms that worsen whenever someone with long COVID tries to do either physical work, like climbing up a flight of stairs with their groceries, or cognitive work, like sitting in front of a computer and trying to get through a day of remote work. The burden of these symptoms is astounding.
And I just want to clarify what long COVID is. It doesn't mean that someone is still infectious. It's the effects after the primary COVID infection is over, right?
Exactly. We think about long COVID as an infection-associated complex chronic illness, meaning that someone had an infection which kicked off a process within the person's body that has now led to ongoing chronic and debilitating symptoms.
And diagnosing it has been so difficult in many ways. First, we were just learning about COVID in real time, certainly back in 2020 when Hannah was infected with COVID. But she described this tunnel vision, which is a real problem in the medical community, right? They identify symptoms and try to place it, even if they don't always have the whole picture. Talk about how that impacts trying to diagnose long COVID.
Yeah, you know, I would actually push back on the idea that long COVID is difficult to diagnose. I would say diagnosing long COVID is one of the easiest things you can do. You listen to your patient. You hear about the symptoms that they're experiencing. You do your best to see if the symptoms that they're experiencing are related to any pre-existing health conditions. But then if there is no link to pre-existing health conditions, and they have experienced a recent SARS-CoV-2 infection, that is all you need for a diagnosis of long COVID. The CDC has been very broad and very, very clear about the idea that long COVID is a clinical diagnosis, meaning you don't need a lab test, to diagnose it as a physician. You simply need to listen to the symptoms that your patients are telling you that they have, link it to a recent COVID infection or a recent COVID infection that is either confirmed with a PCR or antibody test, or not confirmed but probable, that in your clinical knowledge, when someone says, well, I had a stroke, you know, a severe cough and shortness of breath and a fever, and now I'm experiencing these symptoms, you make
of long COVID. If it's so easy to diagnose, you laid it out there, you make it sound simple, then what is going on with the medical profession that you have so many people having experiences like Hannah's that it seems that the medical community was not ready or equipped to treat something, to diagnose and treat something this complex?
I think that in general, the clinical community at large has a lot of difficulty with uncertainty tolerance. When there is not a very clear path laid out in front of us of how to assess and treat in an objective manner, so this blood test is returning this result and therefore this medicine should be prescribed, things can fall apart fairly quickly. There is a long history, and I'm sure we're also going to talk about other infection-associated complex chronic illnesses, but even outside of that realm, there is simply a long history of doctors and other clinicians wanting to psychologize conditions that they cannot easily explain with medical testing.
We're going to have Dr. Petrino hold just for a moment. We're discussing how doctors and researchers are struggling to understand what long COVID is and how to treat those who suffer from it. When we come back, we'll ask what doctors like my guest can learn from doctors who study chronic fatigue syndrome. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Dr. David Petrino is Director of Rehabilitation Innovation from Mount Sinai Health System in New York. He and his team have been treating thousands of long COVID patients. And I want to introduce to the discussion Dr. Lucinda Bateman, founder and medical director of the Bateman Horn Resource Center. She has been researching and treating ME-CFS, commonly referred to as chronic fatigue syndrome, for 3 decades. And she joins us from Salt Lake City. Dr. Bateman, welcome to On Point.
Thank you very much.
So, Dr. Bateman, I want you to describe your first reaction when you began hearing about long COVID and people who were experiencing symptoms like Hannah did earlier, explained earlier in the show.
Those of us in the field began noticing this right away about mid-2020. And I started giving some talks about post-viral syndrome to physicians in the fall of 2020. And in that research, I actually read a quote by our guest, David Petrino, and that solidified for me that long COVID, that the consequences of COVID was going to look very much like the patients we treat.
And so when you say that sometimes diagnosing some of these things can cause confusion, what do you mean by that? What did you find in studying ME-CFS that sort of rung a bell when you heard about long COVID?
Well, the presentation of ME, which stands for myalgic encephalomyelitis, and chronic fatigue syndrome. We link those terms right now because we're trying to progress to something beyond chronic fatigue syndrome. But Dr. Petrino, those symptoms he listed basically are the same as the clinical criteria for ME/CFS. It's a clinical diagnosis. It's considered a post-viral syndrome in many, many cases. We make a very late diagnosis of ME/CFS usually, so we lose track of what the inciting infection or insult might have been. But the presentation is defined by severely impaired function and inability to maintain activity without illness relapse. That's called post-exertional malaise. And those are the hallmark symptoms of ME/CFS, along with the core symptoms of cognitive impairment and disordered sleep, sometimes pain, all kinds of pain syndromes, and orthostatic intolerance, which is a problem regulating circulation in the body.
And sort of talk a little bit about the history of ME/CFS, specifically the skepticism around whether it even exists. Even I remember that from years ago, this idea that people weren't sure if someone was just run down or tired or just the difficulty that some had being believed that their symptoms were something real.
Yes, that problem has really come because we don't have very good available objective markers like a blood test or an X-ray that can tell us about this illness. And we become very reliant on that. The term chronic fatigue syndrome originated in 1988 when the CDC published an article after coming out to study two viral cluster outbreaks in the U.S. One was in Lindenville, New York, with David Bell, and the other was in Lake Tahoe with Dan Peterson and Paul Cheney. Those were the doctors who were taking care of people who became ill in a cluster. And they were trying to understand what virus may have triggered it. And so they published this paper to try to establish criteria for studying it further and proposed that it would be the chronic fatigue syndrome because of the way people were affected. Unfortunately, those criteria were really to study a post-viral syndrome. But unfortunately, it was not a good choice of words and became confused over the years with the other many causes of fatigue that we experience.
And Dr. Petrino, I want to talk about the time that it can sometimes take to get a diagnosis for some people. Hannah, who explained her experience at the top of the hour, said she joined a support group. And on the one hand, she felt a little frustrated that there were some people being diagnosed with long COVID very quickly and getting the care that they needed, whereas it took her 8 months to get that diagnosis. But then she said she realized that people with conditions like ME/CFS waited years before they could get that diagnosis. Talk a little bit about how important it is to the time it takes to get a diagnosis before treatment can begin.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that as we, you know, explore the world of complex chronic illness, what we always run into is the fact that most people in the medical space are not familiar with these conditions, and therefore patients tend to get bounced around and be labeled with diagnosis after diagnosis, often psychogenic. The advocacy group Dysautonomia International published some work showing that for a condition called dysautonomia, which is a condition of the nervous system where the part of your nervous system that typically controls things that you don't need to think about, like heart rate and blood pressure and so on and so forth, if that gets knocked out of balance, that's called dysautonomia. And on average, individuals with dysautonomia would go for 7 years without getting a diagnosis of dysautonomia. And along the way, 75% of those patients would get a diagnosis of anxiety, even though anxiety is no more prevalent in the dysautonomia community than it is in the general population. So this should give us the clue that often with complex, multifaceted conditions, We have a system that doesn't see them. It's funny, we call them invisible illnesses, but I think that that name often, once again, puts the blame on the patient. You look fine, but you're very unwell under the surface. They're really invisible illnesses because the medical profession at large has not developed the necessary expertise to study them, measure them, and understand them.
And Dr. Bateman, these illnesses can present as complex and multifaceted, but as you point out, there is a lot that researchers have learned, including from the research from ME-CFS. And I want you to talk a little bit about some of that. One is the fact that this comes after a virus. So explain how what we know about post-viral infection conditions from ME-CFS can shed light on people who are diagnosing and treating long COVID.
Well, we know from decades of research, including some good prospective studies, that there are a number of viruses that can lead to a post-viral syndrome. And in not just viruses, actually, but some other kinds of what we call atypical bacterial infections, and maybe about 1% of people who get and develop an acute infection will be having lingering symptoms about 3 years later. And that number goes down every year, might be 10% at 1 year and 5% after 2 years and 1% after 3 years. So what's kind of stunning is most of these infections are very common community-acquired infections. So they infect many, many people, such as Epstein-Barr virus that causes typically mono in high school and college students. So we're not exactly sure why, but the pattern is that a certain number of people go on to have lingering damage after the virus is initially in their system. We think it involves changes in the immune system, the way your immune system responds, not just acutely, but chronically to the presence of that virus, and also impact on the central and the peripheral nervous system. So maybe some source of chronic inflammation in the brain called a neuroinflammation, but also the impacts on your peripheral nervous system. And one reason it's not diagnosed often enough is we're good at studying the peripheral nervous system when it comes to the large nerves that go out to your muscles and to, you know, make your body move. But the small fibers of the autonomic nervous system are very difficult to study, and we don't have very many tests. And those are small nerves that create, as Dr. Petrino was saying, all the automatic things in your body. But sensation, all of the different senses are involved with small fiber nerves, and your whole autonomic system that controls your heart rate and your blood pressure and all of the features in your body. So we don't really, and when we say it's a multi-system or multifaceted disease, it may have very simple underpinnings, but it goes to those nerves go out to many, many systems in your body. And our medical system is used to looking at things in silos. So pulmonologists study the lung, cardiologists study the heart, but we really don't have as much advanced knowledge and training as physicians about how to recognize an illness that subtly affects almost all parts of your body in some way.
So one of the confounding things about long COVID is that there's no clear pattern of symptoms. Boston listener Judith described her experience.
My first and only symptom of COVID initially was a rash that looked like a combination of measles and chickenpox. It took over 5 weeks to get over, needing prednisone and a variety of other antihistamines. And then the rash reappeared, and I had the rash all over again, only this time it was a smaller window of about 3 weeks. I am in the RECOVER study for long COVID, and I hope that I'll be able to get some answers in a few years.
So, Dr. Bateman, you're saying how some of these symptoms have to do with the immune system or the central nervous system. Things like a rash, what should that be telling a doctor when that presents?
So we know we do associate rashes with viruses very frequently, but much of what happens after an infection or during an infection is the response of your immune system. The immune system is very complex. It keeps you from it prevents illness, it helps your body attack illness, but features of your immune system are also part of autoimmunity when there's some the immune system It starts to attack your own cells or your own body, but also allergies and sort of an allergic reaction to exposure to the environment. So it's quite, again, the word complex keeps coming up. And that's that interface of the outside world with the complex, multifaceted immune system, and then how it runs the body and particularly the nervous system. So a rash can certainly come from your immune system responding. And we know that during acute COVID, during what we called the cytokine storm, there's this explosion of immune response, including, for example, mast cell and mast cell activation. And mast cells are part of your allergic system. And we think that in the chronic phase, your mast cells, which are white cells all over the tissues in your body, may be sensitized and overreacting to exposures.
Dr. Petrino, we've been hearing about how complex, the complex way in which long COVID can present and the symptoms that can be presented. And you said earlier in the hour that it's really simple to try and diagnose. It seems still very complicated to me. We're going to dig in a little more about the lessons of ME/CFS that can be applied to long COVID, but just in dealing with complex post-viral syndromes like this, kind of square for me, the complex and how you get to the point where it can be simple to diagnose.
Yes, well, I think that I would start by saying, given the CDC guidelines for diagnosis of long COVID, meeting those criteria is simple. If someone comes to you and they tell you that they're still experiencing significant symptoms that are interfering with their daily life after an acute and often non-severe SARS-CoV-2 infection, that is long COVID. And, you know, of course, you want to measure some things. Of course, you want to run some tests to make sure that large organ systems are operating safely and there's not a risk of serious pathology. But for any clinician looking to diagnose long COVID, that should be the point where you say, we're going to diagnose you with long COVID because you meet criteria for long COVID. Now, treatment is more complex. We know that long COVID can present in many different ways. In fact, you know, a study that was completed by the patient-led research collaborative in The Lancet showed over 200 symptoms that affected every organ system. So once you have the diagnosis of long COVID, the next question becomes, how do we string together the different symptoms and understand them in a way that makes sense to guide some treatments that will ease the intensity of those symptoms? Some patients will benefit from autonomic rehabilitation for their dysautonomia or orthostatic intolerance. Others may in fact benefit from treatments that, as Dr. Bateman mentioned, to pull back on the neuroinflammation that they're experiencing. Others may benefit from immunotherapies. Others still may benefit from, other things to treat the extreme pain in the joints that they're experiencing and the cognitive impairments that they're experiencing. So for every single patient, we need to take stock of the symptoms that are being presented to us and start with a personalized treatment plan. And that is where the complexity lies. But also, when we think about it through the lens of personalized medicine, even this is somewhat simple in that all you need to do to treat the symptoms of long COVID is to listen to what your patients are telling you and address the most debilitating symptoms first in your care plan.
And I want to, and on that point, Dr. Bateman, and we have about 30 seconds before our break, but talk a little bit about that, how the issue of being believed by your doctor, and is that more likely to happen to women, to certain demographics? Talk about that aspect of this.
Yes, I think historically it has been true that women have been given less attention for this. But this is it's been very difficult for men who also get it. It's really for everyone. But we really have to listen to our patients and take care of them.
We are talking about how doctors are struggling to understand two chronic, often debilitating diseases, ME/CFS and long COVID, and what the medical profession can learn from one disease about the other. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. We're talking about how complex post-viral infections like long COVID and chronic fatigue syndrome have challenged the medical profession, the way it's structured and the way it's practiced. Dr. Lucinda Bateman is founder and medical director of the Bateman Horn Resource Center. She's been researching and treating ME/CFS and has been turning some of her attention to long COVID. And Dr. David Petrino is director of rehabilitation innovation for Mount Sinai Health System in New York. He and his team have been treating thousands of long COVID patients. So, Dr. Bateman, what's one of the biggest lessons that we can apply from ME/CFS to long COVID?
I think the most important takeaway, or something I would like everyone, and particularly clinicians, to know, is this illness is devastating. It impairs the ability to function physically and cognitively. And if you try to push through, sometimes things get worse and worse. That may be why it's a progressive illness in the way we're seeing it. We need to understand that science better. But until then, every clinician who encounters patients needs to be careful about giving their patients support, helping them pace or downsize their activity to minimize symptom exacerbation, and give them what they need to function with their impairments.
And Dr. Petrino, what do we still have to learn from, for example, studies of long COVID that are going on now, studies like the one the caller Judith from Boston said she's participating in now?
So I think from my perspective, the large proportion of work that needs to occur right now in long COVID is understanding the different endotypes of long COVID. And what I mean by that is long COVID, once again, I sort of highlighted that it's easy to diagnose long COVID because of the diagnostic criteria that the CDC put forward. But what is less easy is understanding what is behind the symptoms that people are experiencing. We already have really dramatic evidence out there to show that individuals with long COVID may be experiencing viral persistence, meaning that the SARS-CoV-2 virus is still active in their bodies and not being cleared by their bodies. So that endotype of long COVID could benefit from an antiviral like Paxlovid. We've seen studies that show that people with long COVID experience reactivation of existing viruses in their bodies, such as Epstein-Barr virus, and those individuals might benefit from targeted therapeutics that address those existing viruses and outbreaks of those existing viruses in their body. We see chronic inflammation that may need to be treated with systemic anti-inflammatory or targeted anti-inflammatory medications. We also see straight dysautonomia that is as a result of a nerve in the body called the vagus nerve that is functioning improperly. And those people need autonomic rehabilitation and perhaps other modalities to treat the dysautonomia, but recover quite nicely with that intervention. So understanding the different endotypes and understanding also that someone with long COVID could have two or three of those endotypes is very, very important for the next steps of clinical trials that will attempt to treat long COVID. Because the one thing I can promise you is that all long COVID, just like all ME/CFS, will not be treated by a single medication. It's going to take...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Please finish it.
I was going to say it's simply going to take a better understanding of the pathobiology behind each of these endotypes for us to understand which medications we should treat which patients with.
And I appreciate you explaining to us what endotypes are. I'm learning a lot in this conversation, but it's an anticipated, Dr. Petrino, another question that I had just about how long COVID works and the fact that it is a post-viral condition. Is it that the virus itself does something to the body, or that the virus itself is somehow destructive, or is it in the way the body reacts to the virus, or is it both? It sounds from what you were just saying that it's both.
Yes. It can be one or the other or both, I think, is the correct answer. I mean, I think what we're seeing is diversity in the types of things that are driving the symptoms that we're seeing. But the symptoms that we're seeing are can be very similar. And I think that also, you know, it is worth mentioning that that's because we... As a group, clinicians haven't done a great job of creating instruments that measure these symptoms in great detail so that we can be quite specific about the type and the quality of the symptom that we're seeing. What I mean by that is 80% of my patients will report that they have severe fatigue, but there are many different types of fatigue. Fatigue comes in lots of different shapes and forms, but the scales that we have only measure this generalized fatigue. 86% of our patients report post-exertional symptoms, but many of them have very nuanced reactions to an exertional event. And what we need is to be able to start to classify the different qualities of these symptoms so that we can also start to say, okay, you're experiencing this sort of fatigue and this sort of post-exertional symptom and this sort of cognitive impairment. That means that you have long COVID that is being driven by this process, not that process. And therefore, we're going to give you these medications, not the other medications that would either be ineffective or may even cause some harm. So there's a lot of work to be done. And, you know, I also, if I haven't done so yet, I want to acknowledge, you know, the allyship and the wisdom that we've been drawing from the ME/CFS community. I mean, I'm a little bit starstruck to be on the same line as Dr. Bateman, because I've been rapidly educating myself on her work and trying to understand ME/CFS, because prior to the pandemic, I did not have a background in it. But what I do know is every time myself or a collaborator, every time we publish something, you look in the literature and you see it was published in the ME/CFS world 5, 10, 20 years before. So it has been humbling and a rapid learning experience.
Well, Dr. Bateman, we've been hearing a lot, understandably, from our listeners. And on Facebook, our listener Angelica writes, had two illnesses in 2011 and 2014 that causes all the symptoms described. Got a diagnosis of fibromyalgia after a couple of years, still on disability. Dr. Bateman, what we've learned from both ME, CFS, and long COVID teach us about other diseases like fibromyalgia?
Oh, they're all falling under the same umbrella. And if once we learn to recognize the aspects, we call these comorbid conditions. So widespread pain amplification is fibromyalgia. And, you know, we have what we need in medicine to address many aspects of these related conditions. I just want to emphasize that patients with ME-CFS, there's probably at least 1 million patients with ME-CFS in the U.S., and there are many, many more worldwide. They need our attention as we turn our attention to long COVID. And what is needed is for all clinicians to come up to speed and on what we're learning about long COVID, and then open our arms and take care of those people around us who've been sick for decades with symptoms of these complex chronic illnesses. That's our plea. That's our mission at Bateman Horne Center. And we really want to help provide whatever it takes so that as the medical community becomes more aware, they can find these resources about how to practically address a patient and make a diagnosis and start to support these patients and tease apart the different aspects of their illness. So while we're waiting for the science, we can take care of our patients.
Listener Pam called us from Calais, Vermont, and told us how long COVID led to the death of her mother.
My mother passed away in May from what I believe is long COVID impacts to her dementia, which was mild before she got COVID 2 years prior and became very severe after having COVID and surviving it. I think more research needs to go into, I think there's some being done in the UK about Alzheimer's and COVID, and this is really what I feel really damaged my mom.
Dr. Petrino, you mentioned one of the things that could happen is the triggering of other conditions. That seems that could be what's happening here, but can you also talk about age? Is this something that is more likely to have that effect in older people, and can young people get long COVID too?
Absolutely. Long COVID does not appear to really discriminate when it comes to age. Even we see long COVID frequently in children. And although there are studies that point out that children are less likely to develop long COVID, I would push back on those studies and say that I think, honestly, children just find it harder to express some of the early symptoms of long COVID, because many of the kids who come to our clinic with long COVID symptoms, initially the presenting complaint, unlike adults who come to our clinic, who initially will present with post-exertional symptoms and fatigue, and then we dig into all of the other symptoms, the most common symptom we see in kids is showing up with an upset stomach, a chronically upset stomach. And then when we actually ask the targeted questions, yes, the child is also experiencing fatigue and post-exertional symptoms. They just don't have the vocabulary to share that with us because it's all new to them, this feeling of fatigue and post-exertional malaise. So we really have not seen long COVID discriminating against across the age range. It seems to be that most people are at risk of long COVID regardless of their age. However, in older adults, what we have seen as a feature of long COVID is that sometimes the form that it can take is a rapid acceleration of the severity of a pre-existing condition. So, for instance, someone's chronic heart condition can get significantly worse. You know, it will progress 10 years in a 2-year period. Or someone's diabetes will suddenly become wildly out of control, or in the case of what we just heard here, cognitive impairment will worsen significantly and push someone over the edge in terms of their ability to manage their chronic conditions safely and effectively. So I think that long COVID really affects all ages almost equally, I would say, but sometimes it can look different in different age ranges.
And Dr. Bateman, some of our listeners, like Melissa, is mentioning long-haul chronic Lyme disease. She's surprised that that hasn't come up in our discussion yet. Another listener, Catherine on Facebook, says that she developed tinnitus with COVID, which is still persisting long after that infection. Just talk about all of the ways that these either long-term diseases or symptoms of long COVID can vary.
Well, there is a lot of variability from just a lingering rash or a lingering symptom like tinnitus to much more complicated multi-system disease. So time will tell. And almost any place the virus attacks in the body can be left with a lingering symptom. And we know that that's a large number of manifestations. So we need to be patient. And I think doctors in every specialty need to learn to recognize how long COVID symptoms present in their arena. And then help guide primary care about how to deal with those as we go.
We had another listener, Christina, described having long COVID symptoms, but then it going away. And she didn't have the shortness of breath or other fatigue that she had in the past. Dr. Petrino, I mean, even that, the fact that it can just go away without treatment, is one of the mysteries of long COVID.
Yeah, I think that there are two things that we need to think about when it comes to the relapsing and remitting nature of long COVID symptoms. In the World Health Organization diagnostic guidelines, they specifically state that symptoms can resolve for a time and then come back afterwards. And we have certainly seen that in our clinic where patients have said to us, thanks for the rehab. I feel like I did pre-COVID. I'm ready to go. I'm good. You know, hope I never see you again. And then 6 months later, they've either had a reinfection or they've had some sort of life challenge, you know, a stressful period at work. In one case, we had a pregnancy occur, and that seemed to tip their system back into this long COVID state, and they required to start their rehab from scratch all over again. So I think it's important to note that there is a relapsing, remitting nature to long COVID symptoms. I also think it's worth mentioning that in some cases, and this is why the World Health Organization also in their case description of long COVID, they said that you shouldn't consider long COVID until 3 months after the initial infection, because you could also just be experiencing a long tail recovery from the virus. You caught the virus.
We're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Dr. David Petrino of Mount Sinai Health System in New York, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Lucinda Bateman of the Bateman Horn Resource Center, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I'm Kimberly Akinstor. This is On Point.